Hello and welcome to East Valley News. I'm your volunteer reader, Dan Kaplan, and today we're focusing on news from the towns of Mesa and Apache Junction. Our first story, man dies hiking Superstition Mountains as Phoenix area tops 100 degrees. Residents across the valley faced an unseasonably hot Mother's Day weekend this year, with temperatures past the 100 degree threshold. One person has died in what appeared to be a heat-related medical emergency during a hike at the Superstition Mountains east of Mesa, according to the Superstition Fire and Medical District. The department, along with the Mesa Fire Department, was responding to a call for help from five hikers experiencing heat issues near the Wave Cave trailhead. The hikers said they had been on the trail for around 6 hours. Multiple rounds of CPR were conducted on a 33-year-old man when medical personnel arrived, but he did not survive, according to the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. The four other hikers were not injured and were assisted down the mountain, the department confirmed. Officials discouraged people from returning to the area for the rest of the day. No foul play was suspected in the man's death, and the Pinal County Medical Examiner will determine the cause of death, the Sheriff's Office said. High temperatures were expected to reach up to 108 degrees, in many areas on May 11, with the National Weather Service office in Phoenix warning of moderate risk due to the heat. That's close to 10 degrees higher than average for this time of year, making it one of the hottest days of 2025 so far. There will be breezy conditions in Metro Phoenix with gusts up to 25 to 30 miles per hour through May 13. Morning temperatures were also unseasonably warm on May 11, coming out to 77 degrees in Phoenix, 81 in Scottsdale, and 75 in Casa Grande. We're in store for an unseasonably hot Mother's Day today as afternoon temperatures top out in the triple digits across the lower deserts and 90s across the higher terrain, the Phoenix office of the National Weather Service posted on X. Be sure to stay hydrated and cool today. Local meteorologists expected temperatures to cool starting on May 12, with highs in the low 90s for most of the week. The Weather Service cautioned those sensitive to the heat, like people without adequate cooling or pre-existing health conditions, to stay hydrated and not be outside for long periods. The warm Mother's Day comes at the close of an already unseasonably hot weekend. The high in Phoenix was 103 on May 10, compared to the average of 92 degrees. The record in the valley for the day was 111 degrees back in 1934. Phoenix has opened up its heat relief network to offer free water and an inside place to cool down. Residents can access the map to find an open location that's convenient for them. The network opened May 1st and will be available through September. That story was Man Dies Hiking Superstition Mountains as Phoenix area tops 100 degrees. The next story, permit sought by new owner of Apache Junction Marijuana Cultivation Infusion Kitchen. A conditional use permit is being sought to continue the use of an existing marijuana cultivation and infusion kitchen facility under new ownership on the southwest corner of South Tomahawk Road and East 18th Avenue in Apache Junction. The Apache Junction Planning and Zoning Commission will discuss and vote on the permit at a meeting that begins at 7 p.m. Tuesday, May 13, in the Council Chambers, 300 East Superstition Boulevard. Scott Vargas of Border Health, Inc. and Cortex Holdings, LLC, represented by Justin Brandt of Bianchi Brandt, is the applicant. Cortex Holdings, LLC, Scott Vargas, is the property owner. The property, at 1575 East 18th Avenue, has been used for marijuana cultivation and infusion kitchen operations since 2014, pursuant to multiple conditional use permits approved under the city's marijuana regulations and conditional use permitting procedures, senior planner Nicholas Leftwich said in a staff report. The facility is not a dispensary and is not a retail facility, which means that on-site consumption and sales is prohibited. No medical marijuana patients, public recreational marijuana customers, or anyone else, except authorized agents associated with the facility, are allowed to access the site, it states. That story was permit sought by new owner of Apache Junction Marijuana Cultivation Infusion Kitchen. The next story, Way More Waymos. Company plans to more than double its fleet. Autonomous vehicle operator Waymo plans to more than double the size of its fleet over the next year by beginning manufacturing at its facility in Mesa. Waymo, the autonomous vehicle arm of Google parent company Alphabet, has about 1,500 Jaguar I-Pace vehicles on the road across four cities, with the lion's share of those vehicles in Metro Phoenix. Over the next year, it plans to add 2,000 more vehicles as the company expands its service to three new metros in 2026. The company is partnered with Magna International, an automotive supplier that announced plans to build a manufacturing facility in Mesa in 2024. There, pre-built Jaguars will get retrofitted with self-driving technology. The plant, located near Power and Pecos Roads, will be used to integrate the Waymo driver technology into the vehicle. According to a Waymo spokesperson, once the system has been validated, the Waymo vehicle can pick up passengers within 30 minutes of leaving the factory. At full capacity, the 239,000 square foot facility will be able to produce tens of thousands of vehicles per year. The Waymo driver integration plant in Mesa is the epicenter of our future growth plans, Ryan McNamara, Vice President of Operations for Waymo, said in a statement. With our partners at Magna, we've opened a manufacturing site that enables the cost, efficiency, flexibility, and capacity to scale our fleet to new heights. The Waymo driver technology that will be manufactured at the plant can be integrated into current and future platforms, including the existing I-Pace vehicles and the upcoming Zeekr vehicles. Unlike the Jaguar I-Pace vehicle that is already operating autonomously in Phoenix, the Zeekr will use the sixth-generation Waymo driver technology. The I-Pace uses the fifth-generation Waymo driver technology. According to Waymo, the sixth-generation technology was designed to operate in even harsher weather conditions without manual intervention, including freezing temperatures that might not have been encountered in cities where Waymo has rolled out its fully autonomous service. Waymo operates fully autonomous rides to the public in Phoenix, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Austin. Phoenix is Waymo's largest coverage area. The company operates across 315 square miles in the Phoenix metro. The area covers much of Phoenix, all of Tempe, most of Scottsdale, and portions of Mesa and Chandler. It will be bringing autonomous ride hailing to Atlanta, Miami, and Washington, D.C. in 2026. That story was Way More Waymos. Company plans to more than double its fleet. The next story, Gold Canyon PEO Chapter ES presents scholarship to Apache Junction Senior. Gold Canyon Chapter ES PEO, a philanthropic educational organization, recently presented Apache Junction High School Senior Brianna Quintanar with the chapter's Patricia Mortensen Scholarship at the AJHS Academic Awards and Scholarship Night. Quintanar received $1,500 to go toward her tuition at Arizona State University, and she also received $840 from the chapter to be spent toward coursework books. The Chapter ES Book Club collected $840 through books read throughout the year, giving a penny a page read toward this fund. The scholarship amount was taken from the chapter's yearly fundraising projects, such as pecan sales, magnet sales, and other fundraising efforts. Chapter ES is one of approximately 6,000 chapters across the U.S. and Canada that raise money in various ways within their communities. These funds have contributed to more than $420 million given in grants, scholarships, awards, and loans to women in the U.S. and internationally. The primary amount of Chapter ES's fundraising goes toward the PEO International projects, with the remainder going toward PEO Arizona State projects and its own Patricia Mortensen Scholarship, which goes to a young woman from a local high school each year. For information about PEO, go to www.peointernational.org. And that story was Gold Canyon PEO Chapter ES presents scholarship to Apache Junction Senior. The next story. This Arizona officer launched a crime-free lease movement. Now he says his legacy is under attack. In the 1990s, Tim Zering had an idea to make apartment buildings safer. As a crime prevention officer with the Mesa Police Department, he was concerned by how much time police spent responding to service calls from apartment complexes. If there were a way to empower landlords to handle matters themselves, he thought, it would reduce the burden on law enforcement. Partnering with an Arizona-based landlord attorney, he devised the Crime-Free Lease Addendum, a document attached to a standard lease agreement that gives landlords broad discretion to define what is considered criminal activity. The addendum allows a landlord to evict a tenant based on an accusation alone, even if there is no conviction, charge, or even a crime. Today, most Arizona tenants sign the crime-free addendum when they rent an apartment, even if they don't fully understand its implications. Though the document originated in Mesa, it is now used by landlords in hundreds of cities across the country and internationally. Zering intended the addendum to make evictions easier for landlords so local law enforcement could spend more time on serious crime. In the materials he developed to train police officers and landlords on how to implement it, the addendum is referred to as a tool for eviction. Before the addendum, Zering described an adversarial relationship between landlords and local police. It was exactly what we needed to get along, Zering said of the lease addendum's peacemaking function between property managers and law enforcement. But an investigation published by the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com found the addendum falls short of Zering's goal of reducing crime on rental properties. Instead, an analysis of crime data near buildings that have implemented the program found it has no measurable effect on crime, even after it was implemented in 9 out of 10 of Arizona's most populous cities. The investigation also found that the policy tends to target poorer households that are 2 times more likely to be black or non-white. That police used materials rife with racial stereotypes to train landlords on how to implement the policy, and that local police departments do not collect data or keep records on the program's effectiveness. And while these programs don't reduce crime, the analysis found they do increase evictions, which are associated with a broad swath of social harms, from economic instability to declines in mental health to increased crime. An eviction turns a family's life upside down when they're likely already in crisis for whatever happened before the crime-free lease addendum was used against them, said Leslie Ross, chief counsel for the Civil Rights Division of the Arizona Attorney General's Office. For the past several months, Ross, alongside Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, has looked into problematic and potentially illegal ways Arizona landlords use the addendum. In response to the Republic's findings, Zering defended the addendum's effectiveness by recounting testimonials from tenants and police officers who say his program works. We have got many, many, many police officers that have gone on the record, name, rank, serial number, agency name, actually giving reduction in police calls and reduction in police written reports, Zering said. Several police officers interviewed by the Republic spoke about the program's effectiveness at reducing 911 calls from apartment complexes. But this metric does not accurately indicate a reduction in crime, according to multiple peer-reviewed studies. A reduction in calls could also reflect increased fear from tenants that calls for help could be penalized with an eviction, said Deborah Archer, professor of law at New York University and president of the American Civil Liberties Union. These programs make people scared to call the police for assistance, and it's one of the ways they're being challenged around the country, Archer said. Zering did not challenge the finding that his program increases evictions. But he did challenge any assumption that this is a bad thing. What I'm saying is when you talk to people that live in those apartment complexes, they will tell you evictions are a fabulous thing, he said, because I don't want my kids getting shot by bullets that go through doors and floors and walls and windows. I don't want my children being molested. I don't want my children seeing drug deals going down. Zering said news coverage of the effects of his addendum say landlord bad, landlord bad. And they don't talk to any of the tenants that say, hell yes, I support the landlord. On a recent morning at the West Side Police Station in Tucson, about 30 apartment managers attended a full-day training on how to implement the crime-free program. Training manuals running over 90 pages were distributed, beginning with an overview and summary signed by Zering and touting the program's success. Criminals are like weeds, reads a header in Part 1 of the manual that focuses on crime prevention, before going on to equate the crime problem with killing a dinosaur. The easiest way to kill a dinosaur is while it is in the egg. Once the dinosaur is given the opportunity to grow, it will become progressively harder to defeat, the manual states. The analogy is followed by another, comparing criminals to lions. The two-legged urban breed of predators, the criminals, work in the same way. They stalk their victims looking for easy prey. Lions only hunt when hungry, but criminals are always a danger. This is why crime prevention is so important. Zering has tried to distance himself from these original training materials he authored, including the comparisons of criminals to animals, which he says are outdated. He says he recently stopped distributing his crime-free materials because they expose his associations to accusations of illegal activity. Unfortunately, there are agencies out there that have made some really bad decisions, and it reflects badly on me, he said, citing a police department in San Bernardino, California, that was sued by the U.S. Department of Justice in 2019 for the discriminatory nature of its crime-free program. It has nothing to do with me, Zering said, his voice rising with indignation. It has nothing to do with crime-free. But these manuals, which the Republic obtained at police trainings and through public records requests of police agencies, remain in wide circulation in Arizona and beyond. Nearly all of the materials reviewed by the Republic integrate portions of his original text, use his program's logo, and pay homage to Zering as part of the training itself. Sergeant Richard Gradias of the Tucson Police Department said, Tucson's program was developed by Zering, although the department did not work with him directly. Mr. Zering is solely responsible for the content and any analogies included in the material, he said. The Tucson Police Department has not received any updates from him, and we are not responsible for the material he provided. At the all-day training, a community service officer walked participants through the manual and explained the importance of the crime-free addendum. The group also heard from constables on the details of carrying out an eviction. A fair housing specialist who promised to teach participants how to discriminate legally, and a landlord-tenant attorney who said tenants, like children, require consequences. Sitting with a reporter at a bar and grill restaurant in Mesa, Zering explained his passion for the addendum as the desire to protect vulnerable people in vulnerable communities. Misplaced sympathy for criminals, he said, is the core of the repeated attacks against his program. What I've got a problem with is when a murderer lives next door to a woman who lives alone and she's told, shut up, suck it up, he's paid his debt to society, if you're living in fear, it's because you're a racist, he said, dragging out the R and shaking his finger across the table. The addendum not only gave landlords the power to respond to problems, but it also discouraged some tenants from moving in to begin with, he said. So, Scooter comes in to rent an apartment and Scooter's told, I want you to look at this crime-free addendum, Zering said, setting up a hypothetical scenario. And if you're approved to move in, you're going to have to sign this addendum. It says, one strike, you're out. Scooter says, I think there's another place I'd rather go check out first. The addendum usually is introduced to property owners through crime prevention training programs, also developed by Zering, which are commonly referred to as crime-free multi-housing programs. Zering refers to the addendum as the backbone of these programs and his legacy. You know what it means to have a baby, he said. You birthed it. You carried it. You remember the nights of sweats, cramps, backaches, blood, sweat, and tears. I birthed this child. There's a big difference between when you own something and when you manage something. I own this baby. When Zering speaks about his vision for crime-free, the dichotomies he paints are vivid and absolute. Good guys versus bad guys, criminals versus poor, vulnerable people. The criticisms of his program that irk him the most are what he sees as the attempts by legacy media outlets and social justice advocates to muddy those waters. "I'm sick of the lies," he said. "I've listened to this over and over and over again," he said, banging his hand on the table with each repetition. "We don't care about vulnerable people that live in vulnerable communities. I'm sick of it. That was our number one concern. That's all we cared about." Zering's attitude toward crime reflects the cultural moment into which his program was born. He brought the first crime-free program to fruition in the early 1990s, when bipartisan support for tough-on-crime policies was widespread. Signed by former President Bill Clinton, a Democrat, the 1994 crime bill introduced tougher sentencing laws and poured funds into policing and prison infrastructures. Terms like super predator, coined by then First Lady Hillary Clinton, and zero tolerance, describing policies that emphasized harsh penalties for even minor offenses, permeated the American lexicon and psyche. Zering's program, bolstered by millions of dollars in federal grant money for a new local policing initiatives, rapidly scaled into a national movement. What Bill Clinton did, what Joe Biden did for crime-free multi-housing is, they not only gave us the political support, they funded it, Zering said. All we had to do was say, "Yes, sir, I will do exactly what you're asking us to do." Within the first decade, crime-free programs had spread to rental agreements in almost 2,000 American cities, according to an estimate from the International Crime-Free Association, a nonprofit organization Zering founded in 2000. The effort continues to spread and is active in 200 of America's most populous cities, according to new research released in February by an advocacy organization. In the decade since its passage, the 1994 law has faced wide criticism for fueling mass incarceration, disproportionately targeting Black and Latino communities, and failing to address root causes of crime. Both former presidents have since apologized for their hardline stances on criminal justice reform. But at the time, Zering's ambitious plan to fight crime was met with adulation, reflected in the contemporaneous newspaper coverage that chronicled the program's growth. "Evicting bad guys," read the headline on the front page of the October 9, 1993 Phoenix Gazette, chronicling one Mesa apartment building's drastic transition after adopting Zering's program. Fires burned in toilet bowls, boomboxes blasted all night. Drug deals were commonplace inside apartments with blood-spattered walls. One man was stabbed with a pitchfork, the article begins. That was before March, when the manager of the 88-unit complex enrolled in the Mesa Police Department's crime-free multi-housing program. 8 weeks and 67 evictions later, the article quotes Zering describing the complex as a nice place to live. As the program gained acclaim, letters from cities across the country began streaming in, requesting Zering's guidance in implementing the program in their neighborhoods. "Dear Tim, we are well on our way of implementing the crime-free multi-housing program here in Las Vegas," reads a January 9, 1995 letter from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, with a request for specialized signs that participating apartment buildings could display on their grounds. A handwritten note faxed to Zering from a neighborhood development director in West St. Paul, Minnesota, in February 1995, listed the 29 cities in the state that were interested in the crime-free program, including Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Brooklyn Park. In 1996, Zering helped copyright a training manual for the program that's still widely used. In 1999, Zering ran his first national conference, which became an annual event. In 2000, he launched his nonprofit organization to continue scaling operations. Zering is reluctant to discuss the finances of his crime-free empire. The International Crime-Free Association has reported a net profit of less than $50,000 per year since 2011, exempting the group from filing financial disclosures required of most nonprofits. In 2002, he launched Risk Assessment Services, LLC, a security consulting company that provides services related to his expertise in apartment communities. In 2020, Zering created a separate for-profit company, the CrimeFreeInstitute.com, LLC, where large property management companies can contract with him directly for crime-free training. Zering said he charges landlords a minimal amount. There's very little money in it. A landlord can take the training for $100, he said. Where Zering does make dividends is in his role as a court expert witness on security, for which he charges $600 an hour to testify, plus expenses. He said none of his expert witness work relates to eviction cases, but rather to criminal cases. Rape, murder, assault, crimes like that, he said. Let's just say it's a very lucrative business. Zering, who retired from the Mesa Police Department in 2008, said of his expert witness work, which he described as a noble career. I could make more money in a day than I was making an entire week working at the police department. Still, he said what keeps him preaching the crime-free doctrine across the country is not the financial gain. I'm not in it for the money, he said. I'm in it because this is my baby. Recently, Zering's program has come under intense legal scrutiny. In 2019, the U.S. Department of Justice sued Hesperia, a city in California, and the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Office, claiming the crime-free rental housing ordinance discriminated against Black and Latino renters. The case ended in a settlement in which Hesperia agreed to repeal the ordinance and pay damages to individuals harmed. In August, the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division issued a letter of warning against these programs, stating that their implementation, including use of the crime-free addendum, may violate the Fair Housing Act, a federal law that protects tenants against housing discrimination. The Arizona Civil Rights Advisory Board, a 7-member board appointed by the governor to address statewide issues of discrimination, has tracked the effects of the crime-free addendum since 2007, when members addressed a letter of concern to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. In a situation where a landlord or property manager may be contemplating a discriminatory eviction, a minor violation of a crime-free lease addendum could be cited by the landlord as the true reason for the action, the letter reads. Last summer, Mays began collecting information about the addendum's problematic uses, including violations of a tenant's right to due process, self-policing practices in the private housing market, and potential violations of federally mandated fair housing protections. Zering said he is not concerned about landlords abusing the addendum. That's because tenants can challenge their eviction in court. Tenants get the right to stand in front of a judge and say, "Judge, this is not fair," he said. He is confident that every tenant knows they have the right to fight an eviction, even when, as is the case with the crime-free addendum, a tenant is told they have 24 hours to vacate the property. Lawyers who assist tenants say this is not the case. Instead, they say most tenants facing an immediate eviction do not have the information, time, or resources to fight in court, and many don't know they have that right. There's a power imbalance between landlords and tenants, said Alan Solot, managing attorney for Southern Arizona Legal Aid, an organization that provides free legal assistance to low-income Arizonans. Landlords have lawyers, typically tenants don't. For tenants, an eviction is usually their first rodeo. Landlords are used to it. That story was this Arizona officer launched a crime-free lease movement. Now he says his legacy is under attack. This has been East Valley News, covering Mesa and Apache Junction. I'm your volunteer reader, Dan Kaplan. Stay tuned for more excellent content on Sun Sounds of Arizona.